You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
China's new trade expansion plan, the Belt and Road Initiative, has just wrapped up a major global forum in Beijing this week. The move will see billions of dollars worth of infrastructure developed across three continents in what may be China's biggest trade boom yet. More ambitious than the traditional Silk Road, the Belt and Road will reach as far as New Zealand, with our government sending several delegates to this week's meeting. To expand on the implications of this move by China, I spoke with Victoria University lecturer Jason Young and began by asking him how New Zealand would be impacted by all this.
It depends on how New Zealand businesses and how the New Zealand government want to engage with it. So in a bilateral setting, the initiative could be in New Zealand's court, and so if they want to use it as a way of framing the upgrade of the free trade agreement on seeking sort of business partnerships globally or increasing investment in infrastructure, etc., etc., etc. All those types of opportunities or challenges. And then the second thing is that other countries that we trade with could potentially change in terms of their access or their access to markets in China or accesses to other types of markets. So it could potentially lead to new types of trade opportunities or engagement opportunities for New Zealand and third parties, but it could also lead to sort of trade diversion practices. So, for example, if it's suddenly cheaper to trade from Central Asia into China, and Central Asia has got a product that New Zealand also trades with China, then we could see more competition. So it's really hard to say exactly what could happen, but it's certainly something that I think New Zealand should keep an eye on.
And I mean, we're obviously a major exporter of dairy to China, yep. And one would imagine that this would, you know, benefit that sort of relationship. But I mean, you talked about maybe there being a bit more competition for other regions now that China is stepping up its trade. Do you think this could impact the Pacific, which, you know, New Zealand historically has had like a lot of trade engagement with, and not a great deal of competition on that front?
So, I mean, definitely. I mean, I think you've seen over the last decade that China's engagement with the Pacific has been increasing quite rapidly, both diplomatic engagement, but you've also seen Chinese aid or loans, infrastructure projects, Chinese construction teams, Chinese business people have been increasingly engaging with the Pacific, and that, of course, leads to some competition for New Zealand businesses or for New Zealand aid agencies potentially, and also I would argue creates the need for more coordination and more discussion between New Zealand, Australia, China on sort of aid coordination and development strategies in the region.
And I thought it was interesting that compared with Australia, we seem to have been a bit more eager, I guess. I mean, Australia's missing from any real partnership with China on this, whereas, you know, we obviously in New Zealand, we had the recent visit with Premier Li and you know, a big deal made over the signing of this memorandum of understanding. Do you think we should be taking a more cautious approach like Australia, or are we going to benefit from getting in early?
So I would simply say that New Zealand's approach is pretty cautious, and that signing up to a memorandum of understanding really is just the first step in the types of negotiations that will come after. So you could, if you read through the memorandum of understanding, it basically says we're going to look to cooperate, we're going to work on these types of projects, we're going to try and upgrade our free trade agreement, etc., etc., etc. It doesn't actually sign New Zealand up to any concrete projects, or even it's really just a sort of conceptual piece. So if you look at New Zealand's history of relations with China, you find that that's quite common for New Zealand to feel that the best option for New Zealand is to be at the table discussing the types of activities that will have an impact on its interests as an approach. But I wouldn't say that we haven't been cautious. I'd just say that we chose to be at the table as opposed to standing outside the tent and looking.
Right.
Metaphors.
Yeah. And I mean, what are some of the things that we would have to look at before we considered, I guess, making further steps? Because some of the critique coming out of China and this initiative is that they're simply making use of the excess resources they have, things like steel and so forth, that they now don't need domestically but can obviously benefit from exporting. I mean, are we as New Zealand going to have to ensure that we can, you know, benefit fully from...
Well, I think any type of cooperative activity, say, or anything that New Zealand government signs up to would have to be in the interests of New Zealand and also adhere to the values of New Zealand. So if we were, for example, looking to do a trilateral aid project in the Pacific with China, which we've done before, it would have to meet certain conditions of, you know, good governance, transparency, accountability, and also sort of take into consideration the local impacts of that type of development project. I couldn't imagine New Zealand participating in the sort of the soft loan, because a lot of Chinese aid is all about sort of soft loans. And I would...
Can you just briefly explain what a soft loan is?
So basically they're a concessional loan. So if you think about sort of New Zealand and Australia and how they operate in the Pacific, there's both trade and investment, but then a lot of the engagement with the Pacific Islands is providing aid. And those aid projects have, you know, stipulated criteria about what types of projects they'd be, accountability, transparency, et cetera, et cetera. And it basically comes from the New Zealand government budget to provide development aid to the region. Whereas China's South-South cooperation, as it describes it, is more based on concessional loans or soft loans, which are the Chinese bank will loan money to a Pacific Island government at a very, very low interest rate, and then that money will then be used to pay for a construction company to do an infrastructure project, such as build a bridge or build a port or build a road or something like that. So technically it's not aid in the sense that we would understand it. It's more a loan. And then there's questions about indebtedness. So countries such as Tonga are heavily indebted to China. And then there's the classic case of what happens if the debt can't be paid back. And then usually what happens is the debt is forgiven or just rolls over.
Right. And so with a trade agreement like this, like the One Belt, One Road kind of, we could see potentially more of that in the region.
Yeah, and that's one of the criticisms of Belt and Road Initiative, is that people talk about how these projects will actually happen, what will the environmental impact be, what will be the impact on local development, what will be the impact on the finances of the governments which are receiving these projects, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's all those criticisms, which are pretty much the same as all the criticisms of what China's been doing to date. And so I wouldn't see this as anything new. I would just see it as more sort of stepped up, a stepped up acknowledgement from China that they want to do more of this type of activity.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.